Election integrity is our topic for this particular portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Tim Head, a returning guest. He's the executive director of Faith and Freedom Coalition. And Tim, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this.
Well, this is a very important topic because a lot of different states are, first of all, there's election audits related to the 2020 election, and the I like the phrase that Molly Hemingway of the Federalist came up with. She said, well, at the very least, you have to say, as far as the 2020 election, there were a lot of quote-unquote irregularities. And we see states coming up with different laws, and then we see some of these have even gone before the United States Supreme Court, and the court has upheld some of these laws, and then the other side gets all upset, and so it's quite a jungle out there. And where do the Christian voters fit in all this? So let's kind of unpack all these things. First, let's begin with the issue of election integrity itself. How important is that to the nation?
Well, it's critically important in and of itself, not only the integrity of ballots and elections themselves, but also the perceived integrity of our elections. And so we need them to be, the way that I think a very good and accurate mantra is to be easy to vote and hard to cheat. And so, for us at the Faith and Freedom Coalition, we've now been active in 9 states so far in this calendar year, this legislative year, to try to do just that, to accomplish that in these different states, in Iowa and in Texas and in Georgia and in Florida and in Tennessee and others that we're seeing. So it's interesting when you delve into this that every state really does have different regulations, different even technological approaches to elections, using slightly different systems and things of that nature. And so it's important to be able to, from a federalist perspective, from a state rights perspective, for states to be able to kind of regulate their own state elections. But we also need to make sure that that there's at least kind of a minimum standard of security, mm-hmm. and also of confidence.
And there seems to be a lot of hyperbole on this. I mean, for example, when the Supreme Court ruled a couple days ago upholding a law from Arizona related to voters' rights, the New York Times had this opinion editorial board for, the Supreme Court abandons voting rights. And Chuck Schumer said, oh, this is one of the darkest days of the Supreme Court. And then you turn around and you see, people on the other side and they're saying, the election results of 2020 are going to be overturned and Trump is going to be, reinstated as president. I mean, I've actually seen people say something that almost implied that. And I'm thinking, wow. But it's like a landmine out there as far as trying to find the right and correct information.
That's exactly right. You said earlier that it's a bit of a jungle, and it is true. This is a very live topic, and certainly I don't know how anybody can question that there, at the very least, were all kinds of irregularities and a lot of sort of consternation around the not just the results, like the final electoral results, but over around the processes. A lot of states reporting at different times, and then state legislatures and state Supreme Courts sort of pressing the pause button in a few different states and enforcing different things. And so, look, there are a lot of legitimate reasons why a lot of people have questions about this this topic. And honestly, one of the reasons why this is in some ways is actually our highest priority, legislative priority on the state level for 2021 and then, moving into 2022.
I agree with you. I mean, if you can't trust that the voting was accurate and, reliable. I mean, granted, there's always going to be a cheating factor. Conservatives always have to get X number of votes more than the left because the left is prone to cheat. I mean, I'm serious. It's like, I've often asked the question in several of my columns. If the left is so great, why do they have to cheat to win? But this last one, it brought up a lot of issues. And I think it might be helpful for us to kind of focus on specific issues like ballot harvesting, voter ID laws, and things like that. But before I get into that, tell me about the evangelical and the Catholic vote, especially the pro-life Catholics. Where does that fit in? Because I know that's a big voting block, and if they can be mobilized, sometimes they can offset the cheating that the left does.
Well, which is exactly, you know, sort of the premise of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. So we reach out to what we just refer to as faith voters, and so most of those are evangelicals and observant Catholics. You know, in certain parts of the country, there are high concentrations of Jews or, you know, other religious affiliations. But believe it or not, still in the year 2020, last election cycle, the largest single voting bloc of all American politics was the conservative faith vote, which still made up about 36 to 37% of the entire electoral calculus. Not the conservative or the Republican vote, of the entire electoral. So you know, out of an enormous, a record-breaking election electoral total.
Praise God.
Over one third self-identified as either evangelical or Catholic conservative voters. So,
okay, was there room for improvement?
This is the base. This is the heart of the conservative movement.
And was there room for improvement in that number?
Well, there always is room for improvement, but thankfully, you know, even to rewind to dial back the clock for 4 years. We actually saw 9 million more. It's taken us a while to do the forensic on this, but we've actually found that over 9 million more faith voters voted in 2020 than voted in 2016.
Wow.
So not only was 2016 a record number, a record turnout, but even 2020 was better still. So we're truly finding more and more faith voters, again, evangelicals, Catholics, and other conservative religious affiliations are kind of working their way out of the woodwork and participating more and more and more, which is the only reason why these elections are even close. And frankly, that they were the reason that Trump was elected in the first place.
Hmm. Okay, we have about halfway to go in this discussion. So how about if we just have some brief definitions of some few key issues and why are they important related to election integrity? What is ballot harvesting?
So ballot harvesting is it's actually illegal in about in almost every state. I think 46 states, but a few states, California, the Commonwealth of Virginia, still allows it. The ability for someone essentially to show up at a voter's household, and if the voter, him or herself, executes the ballot themselves, a person can go to a home, an apartment, a nursing home, and can then collect a ballot and then take it to a designated, usually the county electoral office, and basically deliver the ballot. So they can't fill out the ballot, and it has to be notarized. You know that someone that you know that John Smith voted, that the harvester did not cast the vote. But as you can imagine, there are a lot of perils in that. One is that you know, sometimes people, the harvesters, just kind of conveniently don't deliver the vote. If it's from, they may not be able to actually see the ballot itself, but they may know that this household, mm-hmm. you know, historically has voted for one side or the other. And so sometimes adversarial, quote unquote, harvesters will go and collect the ballot from unknowing voters, say, "I'll take it. I know that you're elderly or you're somehow handicapped. I'll take it myself," and then they just never take it. Mm. So there are situations out there of those cases being documented. The flip side also is people, as harvesters, showing up and basically coaching people how to vote, who to vote for. So the harvesting process definitely can be a very delicate process, which is frankly why it's disallowed in most states. But again, I mean, California still allows it, and Virginia, which is didn't just have elections last year, but are also having gubernatorial and the general assembly elections this year. So you know, if you're in a state that it's legal, and you're following rules and laws, it actually can be a pretty strong, powerful tool.
Okay, chain of custody issues, and I understand, for example, in the 2020 election in Georgia, there were boxes, you know, on the street that people could drop their vote off, and made it easy on the one hand, and on the other hand, it could easily lead to voter fraud.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, this is actually one of the adjustments that were just made in the Georgia legislative cycle that just concluded a few weeks ago, about a month and a half ago. Is that the law
that everybody's been going out against? I mean, that Joe Biden called, this is Jim Crow 2.
Yes. I think a lot of your informed listeners will note that he was citing things that were not even in the law and saying it was a violation of, you know, they were Jim Crow. So completely uninformed commentary by, you know, by President Biden there. But as far as chain of custody, in sort of haste, I guess, to make it possible for people to vote, particularly given the extenuating circumstances of COVID, et cetera, you know, there were efforts to have remote voting and have these kind of deposit boxes. This wasn't exclusive to Georgia. A lot of places did this.
Okay.
But exactly right, that some of those boxes were either tampered with or just disappeared and never resurfaced if, again, they were in, you know, kind of heavily, you know, the irony is you don't always find this only – they only disappear in Republican areas, in Republican counties.
Oh, brother.
They never disappear from Democrat districts or counties. And conversely, they only seem to magically appear in Democrat counties and Democrat precincts.
Wow.
But be that as it may, the chain of custody, there are significant efforts to try to tighten that and make sure that that there's personal accountability, the people who are actually dropping off boxes, that there's kind of a transfer of custody, written documentation that, you know, that John Smith is actually delivering this box to on thus and such a date at thus and such a time to, you know, to Tom Sullivan on this and such a date, so that you can actually go back and trace where those things came from and went to.
Sure.
Instead of just we left it behind the office on Saturday night, we promise.
Okay, we have 1 minute left, believe it or not. How about a quick comment on voter roll, cleaning up the voter roll, and also voter ID laws, which is very common sense, the voter ID laws. My goodness.
Well, voter ID laws are certainly common sense, and they're also commonplace. And so people who complain about those things not only are uninformed, but are normally not intellectually integrous. So I would say, in terms of voter registration and kind of purging or cleaning rolls, you know, again, states have every state that I'm familiar with actually has a systematic purge and cleansing of rolls. But you know, what we sometimes find is that secretaries of state just administratively may lag, just may not, some for nefarious reasons, and some just out of being overwhelmed, may not keep up with that very, very effectively or efficiently. And so, you know, in a lot of these states, we're making double and triple sure that the voter rolls actually have to be reported to the state legislature at a reasonable amount of time before an election occurs.
Yeah.
Usually 60 or 90 days before an election occurs.
All right. We're out of time. People can get more information at ffcoalition.com, as in faith and freedom. Tim Head, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Sure. You too. Bye-bye now.